Jeez, dude, I can't believe I forgot this. I'm really dumb.
Chris, I hear you've been talking about the USB-C lifestyle.
You know I've been making the switch, Rikai. I've been making the switch to USB-C for a while, and a couple of my machines actually have the Thunderbolt 3 with the USB-C. You know what I'm talking about, right? And that's where it's just one plug, but you can either use standard USB 3 or it could be Thunderbolt 3. Mm-hmm. And I got a couple of these machines, and I thought, you know, I'm going to try out one of these Thunderbolt 3 docks. Because these Thunderbolt 3 docks are connected at 40 gigabits per second. So it's real throughput here. And I started doing some research and looked at previous Thunderbolt docks for different generations. And it looked like the folks over at OWC, Other World Computing, have a pretty decent one. It's $299, so I'm going to make that disclaimer right now. But with one cord, with a USB-C slash Thunderbolt 3 laptop, with one cord you can provide power, you get essentially 13 additional ports with this. You get four USB 3.1, a FireWire 800 port, a gigabit Ethernet, dual Thunderbolt 3 supports, mini DisplayPort out, which it supports multiple 5K monitors. You also get SPDIF, an SD card reader, a headphone jack, and an additional USB port on the front of this little dock. And the dock's about the size of a little bit bigger than, say, like a checkbook. It's pretty good. It's not very big, and it all connects back to your machine. And then it has a DC power. You plug DC power into it, and then it all connects back to your machine with one USB-C cable, and that gives you all of that power and all of those ports, which is it's pretty great.
Now,
you could even connect an external GPU to this thing.
Now, if only people could make that, but with more USB-C ports.
Yeah, only two, right?
Yeah,
yeah. And in fact, the thing is, you burn one of them. You burn one of those USB-C ports
to pass it through
to connect it to your machine.
Yeah,
yeah. The idea here is there's a couple options. You could connect that to a monitor that has multiple USB-C ports, or what I've done is I've just plugged a USB-C hub into that, and it's got more USB-C ports. Mm-hmm. And I've put that on my desk.
The problem with the hubs though is that you can't power off of them, right?
Not actually. This one you can if I plug a power cord into it.
Okay,
but yeah. Otherwise, no. So what I was trying to accomplish is essentially what Noah and others get when they put a machine down into a dock.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to have all of that, but with one cable for my editing system. So when I sit down at my editing system, it's connected to a 30-inch display. It's connected to large studio monitor speakers. Mm-hmm. It's connected to an external mouse and keyboard and a couple other peripherals. And, of course, gigabit Ethernet. So I wanted all of that in one cord. And I've experimented with USB-C hubs, but those are just USB. They're a little underwhelming. They don't really provide the 40 gigabit performance.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also had a setup where I've had a USB-C hub and then a USB-C power cord coming into my machine. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to try to get it all down to one cord. So I pre-ordered this thing ages ago, figuring I'd try it eventually. Got it in a couple of days ago, and I've been able to try it across two Dell systems and a MacBook Pro. And it works across all of them. It's so neat. It's so neat to have one cord and hook it all up and get all of it. Ethernet, USB-C, display on my second monitor. It just works really well.
I wonder if it works on that one vendor that likes to whitelist these kind of things. I don't remember which one it was.
I think that might have been Dell. That might have been Maybe. Dell.
I thought it might have been Lenovo.
$299 is a bit much to pay for this,
yeah.
But it's only one. It's one dock, and then I can hook up. I have three machines that can hook up to this.
Yeah.
So that when you divide it across the three systems, actually seems to be a decent price.
Yeah.
And off the USB bus means it's all on my PCI bus. So it's off the CPU and it's right onto the PCI bus.
I feel like it'd probably rack up pretty quickly though for people that need docks at multiple locations.
Yeah, although traditionally docks are about $400 too. So I misspoke. You can hook it up to one external 5K plus your laptop screen, or you can hook it up to two 4K monitors.
Yeah.
From a dock though, that's
very few
impressive.
People are going to be going for 5K monitors anyway.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. So, anyways, that's my review. It's just a quick review, and I think this is probably the way of the future. Having several conversations over and over again, Noah and I really drove this point home when we were talking to Dell, because Noah's a huge fan of the docks and he was kind of convincing me of it. We drove this point home. We're like, so you're not really investing on these docks anymore? You know, I've got this really nice Dell laptop here and it's got a docking port in it. And when we asked them, like, wow, so you decided to include the docking port. That's amazing. The guy's like,
this is probably going to be the last machine.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we just basically didn't remove it when we revved it, yeah. And we're probably going to take it out next time. And both Noah and I went, we just deflate it, because the whole idea is it's this one connection that gives you PCI access and power, and you put it down there, and you get uncompromised video out and USB and Ethernet, and it's so wonderful when you want a no-compromise experience from a laptop, and it's been probably forever. I don't think I've ever lived in a time in the computer industry where I could buy a peripheral like this, and I could use it on a Dell running Solus OS, a Dell running Ubuntu, and a MacBook Pro running Mac OS.
Yeah.
And it just works across all of them. And if I hooked up a Windows machine, it probably would have worked with the Windows machine too.
Now, imagine a glorious future where all standards were widely accepted and all standards worked just as well as this.
It's a dream. Yeah. It really makes like, I don't have to invest in a format. I don't have to invest in a technology or a connector. I can just buy one thing and use it. And it makes me consider like external GPUs. It makes me think about getting monitors that connect over this, because they'll work across all my machines now.
Yeah. You know, it kind of looks like it looks nice, because it's just like a wide, fat nook.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like a thinner.
I keep looking at it. I'm like, man, that's a big nook.
Yeah, it is. It looks like a wider but thinner nook. Like, it's not quite as tall as the original nook. It's a USB 3.1 powered hub, but it's also a FireWire 800 hub. It's also a USB-C hub. It also does DisplayPort and gigabit Ethernet. It's it's great for me, because I can hook up one system and all of it.
I think the killer one is Ethernet.
It's such a killer feature, because some of these systems don't have Ethernet.
Yeah.
Now. It's such a killer feature. I'm really excited. I got an email from a listener a couple of days ago, and they said something to the effect of, I'm done with your chat room. It's just a bunch of assholes in there. And I immediately got defensive. I'm like, it's not. You can't just categorize an entire group of people like this. That's incendiary. And so I logged into the IRC chat room, and I started with, it's like, guys, we have a serious problem. Looking back at the last 12 hours of IRC log here, like just scrolling back, it is legitimately nothing but complaining and griping and just sort of stick in the mud attitude.
Not on any specific topic even, just everything.
And so I immediately clicked with me, oh, this is what he was talking about, this email that I got. Guys, we got a problem. You've got to change the tone of conversation in this room, because this IRC room is dying. We've had about 20 people leave in the last few days. There's now more people hanging out on Discord than idling in our IRC chat room. See, a funny thing happened. When we launched Discord, we thought it would sort of run in parallel with the chat room, but people were really looking for somewhere else to go. And I didn't realize that, and I'm really thankful about the timing, because if we had decided not to launch Discord, I bet they just would have left the community. But because we gave them a viable, non-hostile place to move to, like, the Discord's just taken off like crazy.
Yeah, and we have like over 500 people on it.
Yeah. And the IRC room is just slower and crummier than ever. And so I'm like, guys, we've got to change this. The room is beginning to suffer. It's people are leaving. Like, we have to make this a more constructive conversation here, because it's chasing people away. Needless to say, that conversation was not well received. Mm-hmm. And I think I've actually decided I'm just taking a break from the IRC room.
Mm-hmm.
I walked away with the realization that they just want to be cranky.
Yeah,
they just want to be cranky.
It sucks, because there's nice people in there too, but there's like just this vocal minority that will argue with anything you say.
Yeah.
And if you don't respond, they will come up with their own narratives and propagate those narratives to other people to make them hate you, even though you did not say anything.
Yeah, and the narratives are so gross.
Yeah.
They're so gross. They're like wet dream
drama
bad
narratives.
Guy drama narratives that they create because they're bored. And it's for the person on the other side of that's being projected upon. It's so insulting to see it, and it's so demotivating. And I didn't expect it to go down like that. And it reminded me of the way it went down in the last subreddit, and how bummed I was for like 3 weeks about that. Like, mm-hmm. I was legitimately depressed about losing such a great community resource. And now watching it again happen with the IRC room, I'm not quite as distraught about it. Because I think what I've realized is that resources and locations or protocols and technologies, they don't define what a community is. The people define what a community is, and it is our responsibility to stay on top of that and keep providing a place for them to congregate and be a community. And so when we launched Discord, we basically gave people a life raft from the IRC. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that because I wasn't experiencing that as the host. People are generally pretty positive when I'm in the room. And it wasn't until I had idled in there a while and watched the backlog and then got complaints over email where I realized people were desperate for an alternative. And I wasn't experiencing it. So I didn't realize that. And it gave me a huge revelation about the way community works. It's not the IRC room or it's not the subreddit that makes the community. It's the people, and you just got to give them the place. If you build it, they will come.
Yeah. You know, I also think Discord ends up being a better option for a multifaceted community like Jupiter Broadcasting because, as we've been doing, we've slowly been rolling out new channels for specific topics. That way people can listen to what they want to listen to rather than...
Or chat about what they want to chat about.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, one of the complaints we used to get about IRC before we split off the Unfiltered channel is that the main channel was always filled with politics and plenty of people are coming there for the tech. They don't care about the politics. They don't want to hear about the politics. They hear about that in the news.
Which is the very reason we put all the politics in its own show on the network content-wise.
Yeah, exactly. So they can come to the Discord, they can mute the Unfiltered channel if they don't want politics, and they can just get the tech stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that is really nice. And then we have the hair care channel, which is like talk to the CEO for a moment. We have the content corner where people can brainstorm about ideas for future shows. We even have the Trek corner because I love Star Trek.
Yeah, and you know, that whole Unfiltered split itself was a giant load of drama too because, you know,
It's still actually a point of contention in the IRC chat room.
Yeah, people complained, you know, you're silencing us, you're putting us in a silo. No, we're just trying to make a better experience for our community.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think about down the road, maybe sooner than later, doing a live episode of User Error on Discord?
Yeah, sure.
Now, do we launch that? I almost wonder if we launch that. Well, yeah, that's... The thing about User Error is it's sort of a non-trigger zone safe space where we can say anything we want and then we can say, shit, we can't put that in the show. But it's a total, like, the whole idea is there's no filter. We just totally just say whatever we want. And if we're live, that changes a bit.
Well, let's not put it live on JB, Chris.
Just put it in the Discord and we'll just try it. So we'll make an announcement maybe in next week's episode if we remember on the live episode. Maybe we do the War Games stuff live.
Maybe.
There's a kid invasion all of a sudden in the studio. All right, let's do that. Let's do the War Games. Oh, we should probably talk about the War Games plans. Hashtag Ask Air on the Discord. Echinos asks, talk about some of your favorite old tech geek / hacker movies. War Games comes to mind. Well, Echinos, stand by on the War Games thing. Do you have any old classic, Hackers?
Yeah.
With Angelina Jolie is one of my favorites.
That's really the only movie, Chris.
Yeah, there's a few. Do you remember this is one of my personal favorites just from an old campy standpoint, aside from War Games, which we'll talk about more in a moment. But did you ever see The Net with Sandra Bullock?
Yes.
That is so painfully great. It's so wonderfully painfully great.
I think you need to remove great from there.
No, double great. It's double great. Okay, what about you, Beardsley?
Well, there's a classic, Demolition Man.
I love Demolition Man.
It's a future movie from the past, but it's still great. And then The Matrix.
Beardsley, that's not a... Oh my God, it is a
world.
Classic movie. Oh my goodness, you're right. And it holds up. I rewatched it about 2 years ago, and which is funny that that's even in the scale. And it definitely held up. Like, I rewatched it and paused it a few points and like had conversations about, this is really interesting. They're doing this here. It's great.
And, you know, the later films, they got crap, but like they're not bad.
Yeah, in retrospect, in a whole series.
At the time,
so
they felt really terrible compared to the first movie.
That first Matrix did something that I still remember, and it was somehow, I don't know if it was their marketing approach or if it was just me living under a rock. I didn't know anything really about the movie, but mm-hmm. for some reason I went and saw the movie.
Yeah.
And so it was a complete surprise to me. Almost entirely. I probably knew Keanu Reeves was in it, and that was almost it. And so to go into a movie theater and be really just unspoiled entirely, it makes me almost want to just completely avoid trailers. In fact, sometimes I do avoid trailers now because of my experience with The Matrix.
Yeah, it's one of those movies where if you go into it not knowing what it's about and you've never really thought about this stuff before in your life, it can kind of be a life-changing experience.
That's true. It kind of introduces you to the whole simulation theory, too, at the same time. So that's definitely, yeah, wow, The Matrix is a good one. Okay, we're going to leave you with a little homework this week on User Air. Go home and watch War Games, the 1983 flick, where a young man finds a backdoor into a military central computer in which reality is confused with gameplay.
So is this like school homework where it's actually just busy work that you aren't supposed to really pay attention to and you're just supposed to like copy answers off the internet?
We're going to dedicate a small portion of next week's show to talking about War Games, about like the technology of it, the way they thought about computers. We're going to just kind of take a look at it, and we thought it'd be great if you guys had a chance to review it too. We might have a couple of clips so you don't have to, but we strongly encourage if you can get your hands on a copy of War Games, give it a watch, and then come back.
So some of you guys might be a bit young for the technology that's in this movie.
1983. Oh, my God. You're right. Wow. That makes me feel like an old man.
There's people that'll be watching this. This came out before they were born.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
But it's a really good movie.
It is.
As it came out before I was born, to be honest.
Oh, my God. Last.ting.com. That is the URL to go to sign up for Ting, which is mobile that makes sense. If the whole industry had to hit the reset button today, Ting is the model they would follow. You just pay for what you use, not a potential amount of minutes and a potential amount of megabytes and messages. They just take your minutes, your messages, and your megabytes, and what you use is what you pay. The line itself is $6, and then Uncle Sam's cut, whatever that might be in your area. And then your usage. And it doesn't matter if you're on GSM or CDMA because they got both networks, which means they support a ton of phones. And if you bring a phone and go to last.ting.com, you get $25 in service credit. Now, if you want to grab a brand new phone, which I understand, there's a lot of great phones out there right now. They give you $25 off a phone if you buy it from Ting. Or do the pro move, which I really like. You just like go to Google Play, grab a device that you can afford, or go get an unlocked device and bring it over to Ting. Just check their BYOD page, las.ting.com. Little hashtag ask air. You're allowed to travel back in time as a spectating ghost, but just for one day, and you can't change anything about history. You can only observe it. Where would you go?
There's only one answer, Chris. You're going to go see the fucking dinosaurs.
I thought about that. I thought about that for sure. I really feel like the dinosaurs would be exciting because it can't touch you. You're a ghost.
Exactly. You're safe.
Yeah. That would be good, but how would you know where to go?
Well, they were everywhere, Chris.
You'd have to do some research.
So you could go anywhere.
Yeah, but you don't want to screw this up. This is your one shot. So you got to make sure you materialize somewhere where there's active dinosaurs.
Well, like, did it say that you had to stay in a specific place?
No, I'm assuming you can float around.
Yeah, you're a ghost.
Yeah.
And ghosts don't have restrictions of speed. Just go everywhere.
Go everywhere. Okay.
You got 24 hours.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I would still do a little, like, Googling ahead of time to, like, trying to find a hotspot. Like a dino hotspot.
I feel like it'd also be the only time that I'd be able to just like lounge and take a bath in a volcano.
That'd be fun. That'd be good. Well, if you're invisible and nobody can see you, do you think if you had more than 24 hours, do you think it'd go pervy?
Nah.
I think mine would.
I'd just be pervy when people can't see me.
All right, you want to know mine? Okay. Mine's not as fun as yours. Mine's not as fun as yours, but I feel like what I would do is I would go back to...
You totally watch Linus invent the Linux kernel, right?
Oh, man. Would that be... That's what I should say, right? Now I feel like a dick. No. I would go back to Friday, November 22nd, 1963, And I would try to be in Dallas, Texas around 12:30 p.m.
Oh, to know what happened to
Kennedy.
Yeah.
I'd like to go back to the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
You're gonna just like be lounging on the grassy knoll?
Yeah, well, and if I'm a ghost, I'm moving around. Like, I'm looking at, like, the drain vents, right? I'm going up into the book suppository. Like, I'm all over the place. And I'm getting a good idea because it feels like if you could answer the Kennedy assassination, you could have been...
Then you'd go to jail.
Well, no, yeah, you would be silenced. No, you could then say, well, all these other conspiracy theories that everybody else has come up with are probably true or fake. Like, if Kennedy was legit assassinated by Oswald, then you'd be like... All these other guys are crazy. But if he was actually assassinated by the CIA, it would open up a can of worms that would be like, okay, this is what I'm doing I'm spending the rest of my life uncovering this.
If that's the way you're going, I'm surprised you didn't decide to just double check on the moon landing.
Well, that's no fun. I don't ever want to spoil the moon landing for myself. That's a good thing.
Yeah, but you could spoil the moon landing by actually just hanging out on the moon.
Yeah, I mean, that, okay, might be worth it, I suppose, actually, now that you say it like that, because I'm a ghost, I don't have to breathe air. But I want to believe in the moon landing. I don't want to not believe in the moon landing. Like, the Kennedy assassination, I'd like to know what happened there. You have questions.
You just sent me off on a whole other direction, Chris.
What's that?
They never said we had to be on Earth.
No, of course not. You're a ghost, dude.
We could go back.
You're an interdimensional being.
We could, like, go back in time and see if there have ever been aliens anywhere.
So are you now spending your 24 hours shifting through time? Like, you've now branched beyond the original question, because the original question was, I assumed you just picked a time and a day, but now you are spending
They just said anywhere in the past.
So you are spending this 24 hours just traversing time
and space.
Yeah, why not? I mean, you're an all powerful dimensional being.
Although how do they decide 24 hours? If you're traveling through time.
I don't know, because time is a construct created by us humans.
I guess it's your relative.
Isn't it cute? Isn't it cute?
Hours.
We came up with this whole idea of time because this burning rock goes around us at a certain amount, and so we're like, this is time. And then we found the atom. We're like, well, we can measure the decay of this atom. So this is time. We're going to call this time.
Oh, man.
We're always looking for your questions to answer on this here show, hashtag AskAir. Telegram, Twitter, Discord, wherever you ask it. Four of you for this next episode will win a Jupiter Broadcasting t-shirt.
Oh!
Yeah, we're going to give away a t-shirt to four randomly selected hashtag AskAir. I don't think this has to be U.S. limited either, because it's coming from us. Mm-hmm. And why not? We'll just eat it. Let's just
You can literally have the shirts off our backs.
Just send us your good question. Like, ask us a good question, hashtag AskAir, into the show. Hashtag AskError. That's not A-I-R, like I say it, but error, like the kind of mistake. And four of you will win a shiny Jupiter Broadcasting t-shirt, only mildly worn by the beard and myself.
Yeah. But have interesting questions.
So as we spin up the Discord community, JBot has even more work to do to balance between our IRC chat room and the Discord community, and maybe even future places. So we have a couple of Skunkworks projects, a couple of open source Skunkworks projects.
Yeah, we started a repo called Hegemony, H-E-G-E-M-O-N-E, because Chris cannot spell the hell out of that.
I'll put a link in the show notes.
But there's something on there right now labeled core-poc.
K-O-R-E.
Yes, core is the name of the code name of the project. And POC is proof of concept. It's got a lot of design documents, and we're still piecing it together, what we want to do. We're also talking about it a lot in the Jupiter Dev Discord channel. And we're planning to have, like, weekly or bi-weekly meetings about this.
Really?
Yeah. Well, we are creating, a serious bot platform.
Multi-platform. So it looks like in the design phase, IRC, Discord, Twitch, Telegram
are all separate plugins from the main thing.
They would come into an engine.
Yep.
And then that engine would be able to talk to quotes features, like from shows, calendar features for live time, suggests for the voting.
So the entire
DigitalOcean droplet control.
Yeah, the entire idea is that all the plugins aren't specific to any of the adapters, which are the various services.
So plugins are broken out from Discord, IRC, Twitch, and Telegram.
They're all in the engine. And then the engine figures out how to tell each service what to to do with a plugin.
Yeah.
Because it's going to vary from service to service.
And we'll have a link to a diagram in the show notes. This feels like the Soundboard project on a way bigger scale because different podcasts, different communities could use this regardless. You could also see, so you have IRC, Discord, Twitch, and Telegram on this concept diagram.
It could potentially be anything.
Could be Slack, could be Rocket Chat, could be Matrix.
And then, if you notice, we also have in the plugins area, there's a DigitalOcean plugin that can just talk directly to DigitalOcean without having to go through any of those.
Oh. And, of course, that part's also a module, so that could be something else, too.
The commands would come in via one of the adapters to the core, to the plugin, and then go straight out to DigitalOcean.
Hmm. We'll have a diagram again in the show notes. This is really cool. How long have you guys been?
This is within the past week.
Legit here.
Yeah. If you notice, there's also a database section.
Yeah.
But it has an API attached.
An HTTP API.
Yeah. So we can directly attach third-party services to the data, so we could have like third party.
So Google Calendar might be one of them.
Well, no, it's more like people that are creating apps for Jupyter Broadcasting, for example, to integrate things like voting.
Oh, like Kodi apps and stuff.
Yeah, or Android apps or whatever.
Roku.
Yeah, and so basically, all the data is stored in that API area. It's attached to the database, so everything gets data from that. So like currently like the web stuff and the IRC are kind of semi linked together. But in this instance, the web stuff will just only talk to the database. So it'll have no connection at all.
So this you can. OK, obviously, it's obvious how this could work for Jupyter Broadcasting. But zoom out 5 years and picture Canonical using this. Mark Shuttleworth is giving an online keynote. And this could be something that Canonical as a company would use. Yeah. For like live response and managing the community, or a company like Red Hat, or anybody that is a Twitch streamer that has a large community could use something like this.
I could see, you know, certain Mr. Michael Dominic that's got an AI bot platform that he's working on. He could maybe use this as part of his stuff to attach to other services.
So there's so many different areas that this touches on. It's tying in with services that have APIs.
Yep.
There's database work here. There's API work here. There's bot work here. There's
web interfaces.
Oh, absolutely. And so if you're interested in any of those areas, is this all in Ruby right now? Like, where is this? Because that's one thing people always go on. Well, Ruby.
We are still evaluating languages. The reason that that's a proof of concept is because we are mocking up proof of concepts in several languages.
Oh. So if they want to get in on that conversation.
Yeah, to figure out which will best suit what we want.
So you
want to
get on that conversation, now's the time.
Yep.
Like right now.
Hop into the Jupyter Dev Discord. We're talking about it like every day. So
as this episode comes out,
if you have a preferred language that you think's good, mock up a proof of concept and ask if you can submit it.
I am excited about this. Yeah. I didn't know about this until just now.
Yeah, we're taking this super seriously. We're basically throwing away the entire JBot code base.
You know, it's done so well, but it does seem like
it's hit its limits.
And when you look at it with this design, it's obvious this has got to be the way it's got to go.
Yep, I can attribute a lot of the work to Nelsk and the first of the 300. They've done a lot of discussion on this.
Thanks, guys. DigitalOcean.com. Use the promo code Here's the Thing. It's all one word. You apply it to your account after you've signed up, and then it shows up as a $10 credit. DigitalOcean is an easy, quick way to spin up some great machines on their really fast, really powerful infrastructure. They're like the latest generation hosting provider because they were able to get in and go all SSDs, get the tier one bandwidth connections all over the world, and build it around an incredibly easy to use API that even if you've never really programmed before, you can read this and it makes sense to you. I speak from personal experience. They also have a great dashboard, tons of totally combined, ready-to-go, pre-built open source application stacks with one-click deployment. You can get started in less than 55 seconds. DigitalOcean.com. They've got Fedora. They've got Ubuntu. They've got, of course, CentOS, but they also have things like FreeBSD. Now, here's what's really nice. You could deploy Ubuntu LTS, or you could deploy the recent FreeBSDs and use DigitalOcean's block storage and get legitimate ZFS, as Mr. Jude would say, experience under your belt. This block storage you can attach just a little bit at a time or up to 16 terabytes, and it all shows up as a hardware block device. So you can play with all kinds of technologies just to learn or deploy in production. DigitalOcean.com. Use the promo code Here's the Thing and get a $10 credit. Try out that $5 rig 2 months for free. Have you been thinking about Nextcloud, rolling your own backup, or maybe just a forum or a blog? Perfect for that. Or if you're like us and you want some really high-end, fast infrastructure that works with live streams and productions that have like really high demands, DigitalOcean checks those boxes too. DigitalOcean.com. Sign up, then use our promo code Here's the Thing. And a big thank you to DigitalOcean for sponsoring the show. And thanks to you guys for using the promo code Here's the Thing. I have a very good news story to share with you. Like, I am so excited about this news.
Are you going to Mars?
Game changer. It's near that. So those of you who have been listening to User Error for a bit now know that one of my primary connections at home is an AT&T MiFi that's for months now. They have been throttling because it's one of these grandfathered plans that I bought off eBay a little while ago. And they've started, after I use 22 gigs, they throttle it whenever the network is busy. And they throttle it so badly that, like, you lose connection to servers. I get kicked out of SSH sessions. It's dial-up bad. And it's been unusable. And it's a real killer since I make my living online. And I can't, like, if I have to, like, review and edit that Rekai needs to pass by me, like, say, for this show, I have to drive to the studio to be able to listen to it. I can't listen to it at home. I can't do show research at home. It's just been awful. And I've talked about it a little bit on this show. Well, about a week ago, I started considering, well, what if I could get on my neighbor's Wi-Fi? What if I could get access to somebody's Wi-Fi around me? So I opened up different Wi-Fi analyzers, and I started looking around. And I started walking around the neighborhood a little bit just to see, like, what my options are. Like, what if I need to send you a gigabyte file? Like, what are my options here? Can I find access somewhere? And amazingly, I discovered that nearby, recently, a business has set up public Wi-Fi.
Nice.
They have one of those CAPTCHAs that you have to accept, like, you're not going to, like, do software piracy on their connection. But once you accept the CAPTCHA...
But it's opened up to everyone, right?
It's opened up to everyone. It's not protected. You just have to accept the CAPTCHA, and they block Telegram, and they block Spotify, and they block a few. I would assume, I haven't checked, but I would assume they block a spectrum of websites too. I was just so happy to be able to send a file that I did not care. I needed to download Android O for so I could do a review on Linux Action News, and I needed to send a file, and that's all I cared about.
Yeah, and it's extra good because the time that they're probably using it, you aren't home. So you're only using it when nobody else is.
Well, and what I discovered is I can actually pick it up. I can receive the signal at the RV in the barnyard/junkyard that we're parked. But none of my devices are strong enough to send back to the receiver. So I can receive this public Wi-Fi, but I can't send back to it.
Just as a side note, Chris, I've decided to call your junkyard the Bunny Ranch.
It is the Bunny Ranch.
Actual bunnies.
Yeah, and if it's, you know, I chased a cat out this morning. And I'm not mean about it, but these cats, they come hunting for these bunnies, and they're killing these bunnies. And so
You're going to become the old man with a shotgun. Protecting bunnies. Is your name George?
I go on a morning walk before I leave. I actually did.
Chris, don't pet the bunnies too hard.
I know, right? I walk around the barn whenever it's nice. Before I come to the studio, I walk around the barn one time just to, because it's a nice yard. I get to see bunnies and deer sometimes. But today there was a damn cat, Rekai. But so,
you're not going to get this reference, Chris, but one of these days you're just going to tell the cat to look at the flowers. Some people will get that.
Okay. When I found this public Wi-Fi reached the RV, I had 3 days of elation. Where I told Hadia, like, this is going to change our life because we've been living
3 days.
And I can't underscore how awful. I know this sounds like a first world problem, but this is literally how I make my living. There's so many things that don't work right when you don't have good internet, and sometimes the internet's just totally unavailable. It has been a rough 5 months. It has not been easy.
This is coming from somebody that definitely does have this, but do you have internet addiction, Chris?
It's not so much that, because when I'm home, I don't tend to browse the web a lot. I'm not on Telegram
a bunch.
It's
just you need connectivity for work.
It's like when this morning, somebody sent me a link in Slack and said, I think this might be a problem here. And they put the link in there and they didn't say what the problem was. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
It took me 2 minutes to load that web page. So for two minutes.
To be fair, that web page was pretty slow.
Yeah. But for 2 minutes, I'm waiting for a web page to load on my laptop to determine if we have a problem here. I don't know what the problem is, but I've been told by
So you're panicking for minutes.
I've been told by one of my hosts that I think this might be a problem. You should probably take a look at this.
Yeah.
And for 2 minutes, I have no idea what the problem might be. And then when I go to respond to him, I have to wait for another minute for the chat application to load all of my chats, because it takes a minute to download.
Well, that wouldn't be a problem if you weren't using an Electron app, Chris.
Or Telegram, apparently, because Telegram has to update forever. It's been bad. It's been awful. And so I decided to look into what my options were to connect to the signal from the RV, so that way I might even be able to do a show out of the RV.
So are you going to do, like, FCC rule violations to get increased
signals? But I'm going right up to the line, actually. I am going to go right up to the regulation. I looked into different products because I want to actually install something in the RV, because this isn't a problem just here in the junkyard. I go out on road trips and I go to different places and the Wi-Fi is always weak. And if I could just boost it a bit, it would solve.
I can see where you're going with this, Chris. You're getting one of them directional cancer antennas, aren't you?
It's funny you say that, because listener John, not John Uncles that was on the show, but listener John, who was in the vlog, or his RV was in the vlog recently, he's got one of these directional antennas that will boost the signal by 20 dB, and he's like, this is the way you got to go.
You avoid walking in front of it, don't you?
I went a different route. I looked into a company called Wi-Fi Ranger, and I had seven or so email exchanges with support employee Evan over there, and he answered all kinds of questions that I had, all kinds of deep technical questions. And I straight up said, why would I want to use your Mikrotech powered core over a Raspberry Pi running this? He answered all of them, just straight up. He answered my questions about DBs versus DBMs and DBIs.
It puts a lot of faith in the company when you message them to whatever random email address is on their site, and you get in-depth technical answers.
And it's on a Friday, and it's back and forth for like seven emails. And so what I end up getting...
That could be a bad sign too, Chris, because that means he has nothing to do on a Friday.
I got the Sky Pro pack, which we'll see, but it's a 802.11n and everything down Wi-Fi omnidirectional booster that I will install on the roof of Lady Jupe's that will pick up, or I might even install it on the TV antenna, so it's way up in the air, will pick up Wi-Fi all around it, and then it rebroadcasts it inside the RV at a much amplified signal. It'll go up to 750 megabits remotely, and it comes into a Mikrotech that does all of sort of the smarts, including automatically joining to a VPN service they provide, forwarding connections, just like all this stuff. And you can do Wi-Fi priority. So I can say, when public Wi-Fi is available, grab it. When the public Wi-Fi isn't available, connect to the MiFi. And it will automatically switch between them depending on which is available. And then the main Wi-Fi network never has to get re-IP'd, never has to change. My DNS and name resolution all stays the same. It is going to go from I can't work or do anything online at home unless I'm just on my phone.
To having an actual connection.
I may be able to start doing shows from home.
Yeah.
As long as this Wi-Fi access point stays up.
I just kind of like the idea that your RV is becoming like this bubble of radio death.
Yeah, you combine that with all the smart devices and Wi-Fi boosters and Eero routers.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/JupiterSignal. I know you're busy. You got things going on from time to time, maybe all the time. I'm not judging. You miss a show? Well, every time YouTube cooperates, we post the entire live stream for our patrons at patreon.com/JupiterSignal. Support the whole damn network, keep the ads down, and keep us free, weird, and independent at patreon.com/JupiterSignal, and get interesting insights into Beard's life, too.
Yeah. You know, Chris, there are a whole lot of patrons on the Discord.
Yeah. Oh!
A stupid amount.
We should mention there is now a Patreon-exclusive feedback channel on our Discord server. So go to discord.me/JupiterColony to get in on the server. And then make sure, if you're a patron, that you have turned on the Discord perk.
Yeah. There's a whole lot of really nice comments in there.
I was just telling Joe before we recorded Linux Action News earlier today, I said to Joe, I said, so I sat down the other morning and there was like six or seven unread comments in the Patreon feedback thread. And I went, okay, let's do this. These are your patrons. You got to read this. You just got to own this. And, you know, you're going to have to prepare yourself for this. And I opened it up.
And you got your dick sucked.
Handy Sphere has an hashtag Ask Air Force. What was one of your first impressive experiences using Linux? His was actually Puppy Linux and running it all in RAM. I have one that comes to mind for me, and I wonder if you'll agree. The Nopix Live environment, the first real live CD, and one of the things it did that was so damn impressive as it would boot. It would, like, analyze all of your hardware. And it would, like, it had this hash progress bar, and it had multiple colors, and it would tell you about all of the things it found in your system. And then it would construct an environment around that. And it was just a visually obvious way that Windows kicked the crap... Or, I'm sorry. that Linux
Windows kicked the crap out of Mac OS X.
That Linux kicked the crap out of Windows in terms of flexibility with hardware. Because you could literally watch it... It would see your it would count the amount of CPUs you would have with Tux icons, and then it would go through and just totally figure out your entire system and dynamically load modules to support that. And it was just something that Windows was so far from, and still really is.
For me, it was actually when the first real large release of Ubuntu came out.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That was something.
That was just the point where it was like, wow, this is a usable Linux desktop.
This is a usable Debian desktop, which was such a big deal back then.
Yeah, and on top of that, it was like, this just worked. I didn't have to go edit config files because it didn't detect my hardware correctly. It just worked out of the box.
The thing that people take for granted back then when Ubuntu first shipped, it made a big difference, was you would install Linux and there would be three web browsers, three email clients, two IRC clients, and six IM clients. And because game would be the only one that was good.
And the reason you had those, it wasn't just because they wanted to stuff a bunch of stuff in there. It was because, well, some of these might not work in certain situations, so we got to give you alternatives.
Right. But Ubuntu was the first one that said, we're just going to ship one web browser, one mail client, one IRC client, one IM client,
desktop. It was just simple and straightforward end to end. Like, even when you were installing it, it was way simpler than all the other installers.
I don't know. I mean, there must have been, but it wasn't a thing back then to ship only one desktop.
Yeah.
That's not something you did. You had multiple desktops.
You got a choice in the installer.
Yeah, that wasn't like, and now...
Your curses-based installer.
Yeah, and now distros, like, that's their whole bag. Like, we are a KDE, focused desktop, and now, no.
Or we're coming up with our own desktop.
Yeah, now it's just totally normal, but back then, no. Yeah. You didn't ship one desktop. That wasn't something you did. Yeah, Nopix and Ubuntu are great examples of this is going to be different now.
All right, Chris, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with people crapping all over everything you do all the time?
Yeah, well, your question assumes that they do now, which isn't necessarily the case. I mean, there is definitely a group of it, but boy, it sure was the case years ago.
Like, because for me, I've been doing the whole Twitch thing.
Yeah, I've been interested to follow that because I'm trying to come up with like a user error acronym.
Chronicling?
Well, no, like a user error, like you've been user logging that or something. Like I'm trying to come up with like a theme for the show.
Well, that's dumb.
No, no good. Get rid of it. Throw it out.
Throw it out.
So okay, we can't use user logging because that's what I
no. That just sounds like you're taking a really big crap.
When you put user and log in there, it does sound like...
Even just log itself.
Yeah.
Unless you're talking about the woods.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, but we've been following your journey into streaming, and I've been following it with a particular amount of interest just because I'm familiar with the process of creating content.
Yeah. Well, so Twitch itself is fine. People that come onto the channel are fine. The problem is, outside of Twitch, I have gotten pretty direct and pretty rude criticism asking me why I am using Jupiter Broadcasting as a platform to push my personal endeavors, for one. And then two, why I think I should be paid to sit on my ass and play video games.
Ooh, good one.
Yeah.
So like people are coming to like defend Jupiter Broadcasting and being like, don't use Jupiter Broadcasting to further your goals.
Yeah.
Huh. Boy, where were they for all the other people that have done that?
Right? maybe I'm like super overt and aggressive. I don't know.
No. Yeah. So those are two separate things, and definitely things that self-promotion, promoting your work is something that it's a constant source of criticism. But let's go with the bigger one. Let's go with the sitting around on your ass and getting paid to do it. That's my favorite.
Before you get into it, Chris.
Yeah, because I can get into it.
I love the assumption that they know what the fuck I'm in it for.
Ooh, yeah, right. That is it's obvious to them. It's obvious. See, because you must be lazy and you don't want to go.
I'm lazy. I want to sit on my ass at my computer.
You don't want to go flip burgers.
I'm there anyway because I'm editing for Jupiter Broadcasting. Just get a turn and use my Windows box to play some video games and rake in the money from all those poor saps.
So I'd pause here. So we are the unlucky fools that get to deal with all of the associated baggage during the transition.
Yeah.
The way people make a living is going to change dramatically over the next 30 years as automation becomes a thing. And automation is going to hit us in ways that we haven't really thought about. Like everybody, when you think of automation, you think about automating a fast food worker's job. But think about all of the places you call for your bank or your credit card or your cable company where the tech support person just follows a script.
Yeah.
Well, a computer could do that job. Project management. Well, my co-host on Coda Radio is already building bots that can start to replace PMOs.
Yeah, the workforce is going to decrease by like 90%. And on top of that, there's also the fact that a lot of the jobs that are appearing now aren't jobs that you have to be in a place for.
So there's this huge transition and shift that's going to take place in the type of work that people do. And it's already beginning. It started happening in 2008, as far as I'm concerned. But that's an aside, though. That is just people that they're being influenced by a bias that they don't even realize is influencing them. Setting that aside, the idea that what you're doing, because it involves video games and because it involves internet, is fucking off, is a really common perception that people have. I can tell you, as somebody who's been doing this now full time for years, until I started vlogging, my family never got it. And something about the vlog, it connected with them that, Chris is involved in media production. Mm-hmm. He like works on the internet in media. I did this for 10 years before I ever did the vlog. Yeah. But for some reason, it was until it was something that they connected with, they just didn't get it. It was, he has this hobby and eventually he's going to give it up and he's going to go back to work, is how they viewed it. And I think there was many people in my life, even people really close to me, that saw it that way, and I had to constantly shake this feeling of I'm not doing real work, because if you don't take it seriously, because if that affects your thinking, then you stop taking it seriously, and the reality is, creating content is a phenomenal amount of work. It takes this type of emotional sacrifice that probably isn't psychologically healthy. It takes an amount of commitment that I don't think you would normally have for a job. It involves tweaking your life to be available for your community at the times that they're available. And it,
yeah.
yeah. And it requires constantly changing yourself as your audience, not yourself, but constantly changing what you're willing to cover as time goes on. In fact, I was just having a conversation with my son, Dylan. He said, Dad, there's this YouTuber I follow, and he did the best Minecraft videos. And then they would talk about mods, and then they would do these interesting builds afterwards. And I watched him every single day, Dad. He was my favorite YouTuber. But I think he's bored with Minecraft, and he's not YouTubing about Minecraft anymore. And so I don't watch him anymore. And it's this this problem you have as a content creator where you're constantly doing this analysis of what does my community want? Where is the next thing I should be going? How do I stay competitive? How do I get above the noise when there are literally millions of people that are trying to do something similar to what I'm trying to do, but I feel like I've got the right take on it?
That exact phrase Dylan said is probably one of the most painful things you can hear as a content creator.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I know.
They're not doing this specific thing anymore, so I'm no longer watching
them. I know. I hear it all the time.
Yeah.
I hear it all the time. And there's, until you have been in the process of making something for people, you have no idea how much work it is. Like, if people knew to be successful at what you're trying to do, the amount of work it takes to do it, that comment would never come up. And the thing is the only way you can be successful at what you're attempting to do is to just... to work at it in a way that people can never fully appreciate.
Yeah, and see, that's part of the reason why it actually offends me that people are saying that I'm sitting my ass playing video games, because the video games to me are mostly irrelevant. I mean, yeah, sure, it's fun to play video games, but I'm trying to build a community of cool people that I can spend time with and make happy and make good content for.
Do you think part of it is that life has gotten ahead of people, and to them it's a luxury? That's a luxury to them. Oh, I'd love to be able to make people happy and create community too, but you know what, I've got to pay the mortgage and I've got to pay the bills. That means I gotta go do this
yeah.
job that I
and
hate.
You know what, then you don't have the balls to do it. Because yeah, I'm taking a risk, spending a significant portion of my time and pretty much burning myself out trying to get my Twitch stuff up off the ground. But I want to do it because it fulfills me and makes me happy. And I feel like that's probably the same reason you started Jupiter Broadcasting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And maybe that's where some of the root of the hostility comes from.
Well, because they're jealous that they can't do it themselves?
Yeah.
I guess.
I think it could be. I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm not actually trying to suggest that it is. I'm just now that we've gotten to this point, it seems like maybe that could be part of it.
Yeah, I'm sure that's probably a part of it for some people. It really gets under my skin, and I don't know how to not let it get under my skin.
Yeah. I think the way I try to not let it get under my skin is I try to come to an understanding of why they would have that viewpoint.
Yeah. I think I'm also probably in somewhat of a better position than you are, because most of the people that are close to me are freakishly supportive. Like, I wasn't going to buy a GTX 1080, but I was encouraged by the people in my life that I usually spend my money on to get that instead, to try to further my career that I'm trying to start.
Hmm. Yeah.
Which is... I feel like it's a very different situation from what you had.
I would agree up until the vlog, and then all of a sudden, like...
It just clicked over?
I started getting text messages from, I just watched the latest vlog, and I just think that maybe, you know, like, all this stuff started coming in, and it's like, okay, so you now think it's a good idea that I do this? Like, wow, what just happened? Like, why did you go from totally skeptical of my lifestyle choices to my XYZ family affiliate is a YouTuber. Like, what? Like, out of all the things I do, that's what you latch onto. I don't know. It's been an interesting thing to watch it. I think part of it is...
Well, because, Chris, now you're the next Casey Neistat.
Well, no, I think part of it is just those are story-driven for the most part.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes it's like a review of something, mm-hmm. but for the most part, it's a story-driven video.
Yeah.
And if you tell a decent story, it works for anybody.
Yeah.
And so in a way,
it's like watching a movie with somebody you know in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a way, the vlog is the first universal content I've ever made in 11 years of doing this.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, once I made something more universally appealing, it clicked with them. And I think you are serving a niche right now. In a way, it's companion broadcasting is what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't understand the value of that until they're in a position where companion broadcasting is a very comfortable, nice thing to have. And then all of a sudden you realize how valuable it is to have a community of like-minded people like that where you can go and just walk away feeling a little bit better.
Yeah. I think it's probably partly also, like, unless you spend some time on Twitch, you don't really get it, because a lot of the popular people you'll see on Twitch, they're people that do play the, like, specific games, so they are getting paid to play a certain game. Or you have esports, which to me, that proves that streaming is a viable industry.
There's
people getting paid millions of dollars to play video games.
Yeah, that is really something. Esports is needs to be a documentary about esports, because it's incredible. Something huge that, like, really wakes people up and realizes what a thing is going on here.
You mean like the fact that League of Legends was broadcast on ESPN recently?
Yeah, I guess that's what is starting to happen, isn't it?
Yeah. Or the Dota 2 tournament that they had, that they did the AI thing at, a team became the richest esports team. I think they won like several tens of millions of dollars from a single tournament.
Wow.
But yeah, so I'm the third category of people that are the less popular people, where you don't play specific games and people don't come to your channel for games. They come for the personality. And I think that's the least known type of streamer, and people just assume I'm in the other category.
Interesting. I could honestly understand why that would take a little while for people to catch on, because there's things sort of, as categories develop and you're kind of on the leading edge of it, there's a little bit while before there's recognition and understanding of why that position is valuable. Like, look at, not to keep making about the vlog, I'm sorry, but look at vlogging on YouTube.
Yeah.
I think initially it was considered to sort of be a narcissistic joke category.
Yeah. But yeah, like now it's you know, you go there to get your human element.
Yeah, it's real television.
Yeah.
That isn't scripted reality TV. Well, some of it depends on the vlogs. That's a problem. And that's something you have to deal with too, is different people will be jackasses on the platform and set people's misconceptions just wild.
Yeah, that's one of the things I love and hate about Twitch, is that you're doing all of the content live.
Yeah.
In some ways, that's easier, because that means you don't got to do all the post stuff, all the editing, all that stuff.
In some ways, you mean in almost all of the ways?
Yeah, except imagine if you did, you do every show live.
Well, not this one.
You actually made the worst possible choice for most of your shows, Chris. You do it live and recorded.
Yeah. I didn't realize it at the time.
Yeah.
But that, when we started this show, the last two shows we've restarted, LAN and this one, we do them offline.
But imagine if the only content people knew you for, like your entire user base, was the live content.
It'd be like those people that, like, their Twitter feed is like their main thing. Like, yeah. It's just this. It kind of goes back to live radio a little bit. It's sort of how local radio is.
Yeah. See, the thing is, Jupiter Broadcasting is majority, downloaded, right?
Oh, not even. I mean, we are a downloaded network, and we have a live option.
Yeah. So that means that you get to edit out your mistakes.
But we don't really. I mean, when do we edit out our mistakes?
Well, stuff between segments.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But me, everything I say, my audience sees. Everything.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which sure got us in trouble a lot with Lass. And maybe influenced why this show is offline.
Yeah.
Do you think, though, that if it was big, that would be as great? Like, part of it is there's a certain awesomeness to, like, a smaller community when it's just a tight-knit group of people.
Yeah, to me, my goal isn't to be the biggest streamer. It's to build a community where I can still be able to interact with the community. So, the chat's not scrolling by 50 million miles an hour.
Yeah.
But also, it's not just for me. It's to build a community for people that like me and presumably are similar to me to hang out together.
Mm-hmm. I would say...
So even if it does get large, I'm okay with that.
So here's what you get. Then. So if, as long as you're good with that... Then you just got to turn all this haterade into fuel and use that as, all right, you think I'm wasting my time? I'm going to prove you wrong. Like when the day you're not really feeling like getting up early to do the stream or stay up late, you know what? Fuck those people that said I can't do this. I'm going to prove them wrong. And the only way I'm going to prove them wrong is if I grind this thing out and I actually get it to where it needs to be.
Well, Chris, you want to know my typical day these days? I wake up at 6 a.m., stream for 2 or 3 hours. Then I get ready to do Jupiter Broadcasting stuff. If it's a day like today, I I come and I do user error, and then I go and edit another show, and then I get a couple more hours of sleep, and then I wake up and I stream like midnight to 3, and then I sleep for a couple more hours and stream the next morning.
Jeez, you are experimenting with a crazy sleep cycle, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Hashtag Ask Air comes in from a user named Mark Twan? Taiwan?
Mark Twain?
Mark Twain. Never heard of it before. Sounds like a fake username. Anyways, he says, the two most important days in your life are the day you are born and the day you find out why. So what was it for you, Beardsley?
Wait, find out why, but what?
Why you were born.
Oh.
Why were you born, Beardsley? And so it says, the two most famous days in your life are the days you were born and the day you found out why. Famous Mark Twain quote.
I'm pretty sure I was a mistake. So,
but you still could have a purpose. Perhaps it's to create community and bring people together.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
I guess I haven't found out why yet.
Yeah. So keep searching.
Or maybe it's the beard.
Oh, just to bring great beard.
Yeah, maybe I was born into this world to be a host to the beard.
I could see that. I could see that.
Kind of like you and your hair.
All right. So hashtag Ask Air. This one comes in from NT, and he says, the apocalypse has begun. What skill do you possess that might help you survive?
Coercion.
Interesting. I was trying to think, what do you think mine would be? If you're going to just, because I mean, I could throw one out there, but I'd like to hear what you think mine would be. Yeah. It's apocalypse. I know. I think I have an
idea.
Really
good at barbecue?
Wow. Okay. I feel like I'm a surprisingly good barterer. I didn't realize this until I've had a couple of situations in life where I needed to barter.
I can't see you as a barterer.
I didn't either. I didn't think so either.
I feel like you'd get annoyed.
Yeah.
And just get pissed off.
Right.
Is your form of bartering just like punching people and taking things?
No. You know, that's what I would have thought too. I would have thought so too. But no, it turns out I'm a natural at it and I'm damn good. And it's only when it really matters, you know.
It's because you turn it into a conversation.
So like,
and you make people feel comfortable.
Hypothetically, let's say.
And then you scam the shit out of them.
No. You see, you paint me as a bad guy. No.
No, I paint you as a talented guy.
Let's just say you're in a situation where one person has some caffeine and another person has some toothpaste. And the person is only going to be in this place for 24 hours and they don't need the toothpaste, but they damn need the caffeine.
I feel like this is a real situation.
And so you barter with the other person to trade the toothpaste for the caffeine. I'm a natural at this, I've discovered. I barter for all kinds of things, it turns out. And so bartering with...
So Chris, how was Oregon?
Oh, it was good. It was. I feel like bartering was turned out to be...
You make some good trades?
It's a naturally good skill for me. So there's that. Also, So as soon as somebody declares an apocalypse is happening, the very next thing I'm doing is I'm going to the nearest truck stop or like truck repair store, and I am getting the biggest push bar set up installed on my truck, and I am going to just finally push people out of my way when I'm driving. Like I'm just gonna go nuts on the road. So I will. One of my things when the apocalypse comes is I'm gonna get places faster than anybody else because I'm just gonna cut through like the cars on the road or like all of the blown up semi trucks that are on the side of the road because you know apocalypse. Like I'm just gonna push through it all, and eventually I'll upgrade my truck to like tank tires and stuff. I mean I'm going way on beyond just the immediate apocalypse, but I got plans.
See, you've already made the mistake that's going to kill you.
Oh.
You're waiting until the apocalypse happens to set this up. Problem is, the apocalypse is going to happen.
Yeah.
Everybody is going to rush to those stores, Chris.
That's true. You know what I really want to do, too?
And you'll be dead.
Actually, what I would do, legitimately, I mean...
Stay a little while away from the store and snipe everyone?
No, there are three or four trucks that are from, like, the 50s and 60s.
Built like tanks?
In the junkyard. And what I would do is I would disconnect their solid steel and metal bumpers, and I would affix them to the front of Lady Jupe's, and along with a series of tires, and I would just rope it all on there, and then I would take Lady Jupe's, because this thing has one of these Triton V10, like, powerhouse engines. The damn thing is, the thing can move a 25,000-pound RV and still pull 5,000 pounds behind it. Like, it's got some power. And I would just be the most... undestructible. I would just outfit this entire RV with armor from all of these trucks, and it would be like a tank going down the road post-apocalypse.
Yeah, that assumes that you'll be able to figure out how to tie a knot.
Shit. So it's from Rocket Fish Games. It's called Everspace.
Rocket Fish. What the hell else did they make?
It combines a fast-paced combat with rogue-like elements, with great visuals, and a captivating story. It takes place in space. It sends you on a challenging journey through an ever-changing, beautifully crafted universe called Surprise. You shoot, you craft, and you loot your way to victory, while the odds are stacked against you. Shipping for Linux, it supports Oculus, and it's available for other platforms today. I'm legitimately buying this, actually. That looks really good, actually. I started as sort of a bit of a goof, but that looks like Descent only for the future. I'm buying that.
You know, I was kind of going to say, you already own this game.
I own probably multiple versions of this game.
The one I was thinking specifically was No Man's Sky.
Yeah, yeah. But this is more on the space part. This looks really gorgeous.
Well,
I'm actually going to put a link to this. This entire thing was just going to be a joke, and I didn't even think we put it in the show. But now you got to go check out Everspace. That looks incredible. Look at that.
It's all right.
No! It looks amazing.
Looks like pretty basic bitch space to me.